Welcome to Reality TV, your source for snarky reality TV recaps of all the shows we love and love to hate. From TLC to MTV, A&E to Bravo and more, no show is off limits to the truth as I see it, all from the couch just like you. I'm Jody, your inner voice and best friend who says all the things you're thinking, but you have the manners to never say aloud. Be sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss a week, and find me everywhere at Reality TV Pod. Support the show and score some amazing perks and merch, as well as some bonus episodes at Patreon.com/RealityTV Pod. Now sit back, it's time to get salty. Hey there, welcome back. We got a really good show today. Lots of things going on in the shallow end of the news, and I'm going to jump right into it. The first two things, I guess, aren't so shallow, but we have to discuss them. Number one, the HBO Adnan Syed documentary is now out, and I cannot wait to binge that thing so fucking hard tonight. We're going to have to discuss it. I don't know if I'm the only one that is still in the Adnan maybe innocent camp. I'm just confused overall. I'm still stuck on the Best Buy payphone thing. I just feel like if he was guilty, there would be more evidence. Or maybe I just need to re-listen to the whole season one again before I watch the documentary. I don't know. Let me know what you guys are thinking. If you watch it, let's talk about it in the Facebook group. Again, if you are not in that, just go on Facebook and search Orchard of Snark and you're going to find it. And just to clarify any confusion, what the fuck is the Orchard of Snark? Why are you calling it that? It all goes back to 90 Day Fiancé Evelyn Cormier when she declared that the Claremont Orchard is the best orchard or it has the best apples of all the apples. And, you know, we just kind of went with it. So that is why it is the Orchard of Snark. Let's get into Leaving Neverland. I've watched both parts, as I know probably all of you have, and I'm only about halfway through that Oprah follow-up. But wow, holy shit. If there were any doubt in your mind before about Michael Jackson being a pedophile, this documentary or documentary series is going to dispel all that for you. There is no gain to be had for Wade and James. There's no reason for them to lie. When you look at James, especially on the Oprah follow-up, he just looks sick and pale, and you can tell that the trauma, not to get too serious here, but okay, this is a serious subject, so we have to. The trauma has manifested itself into like this physical, I don't know, monster or beast inside him that he is fighting off. He just looks absolutely like he is being tortured and going through this, but it's something that he has to do. I give both of them so much credit for coming forward, and the audience with Oprah, I think it was really powerful. I'm sure many of you watched Oprah. You remember the special she had where she had all of the men in the audience who had been abused and molested. It's just as powerful. And I have not experienced abuse like this, luckily, but I'm going to put this out there and say that if you have been abused or someone you love has, I would skip the documentary. Don't watch the two parts. It's very graphic. There's details. But I do think the Oprah special could be very helpful. It might be healing for you because the way that they talk about what happened, the grooming and the seduction of it, it's not your fault. It is the expertise of these abusers that make you feel that way. I obviously am not an expert in this, but if you're nervous about watching it, just I'm going to speak from a friend perspective. Watch the Oprah special first. She has a way of making it a healing moment, a healing hour. You don't feel like you have been ripped open like watching the documentary. She also has on this incredible buttery leather jacket, gorgeous diamond hoop earrings. Gail is even in the audience. I mean, she's never looked better. It's just a great moment for us all to come together to remember Oprah and really to support these men and women who are in the audience. Okay, let's lighten things up, move on from that. I want to report that I got two new candles from Home Goods that I am obsessed with. If you have Home Goods or TJ Maxx nearby, get yourself over there. My partner, my husband, hates that I buy candles because he says that it's literally burning money, but I don't freaking care. It makes the house feel cozy and it makes everything smell nice. Now, normally I am a huge fan of citrusy scents where everything smells clean and maybe like Pledge has been sprayed all over. I do not like the musky or flowery stuff at all. However, I got this bergamot teakwood one. It comes in this really pretty light green jade color jar. And there's this other one that's in a kind of like a light coral jar, and it's goji berry scented. Trust me, go and buy these. I lit those babies up after about a 2-hour long cleaning rampage, which scared the shit out of my family. They always know what's going to happen. Like every, 5-6 weeks, I just snap and, oh, here go hell come. You better watch the fuck out because Jody is going to lose her goddamn shit. So I had one of those, and then I felt really great afterwards because the house is all clean. Lit them up, poured myself a beverage. Oh, God. It was incredible. I was watching Love After Lockup. I felt like Meghan Markle probably does every day. Actually, I'm more of a Kate, but to be honest, I really needed a segue to touch on what Piers Morgan was spewing this week. He's always been on this mission to make Meghan Markle look like a snotty bitch because he met her, I think, once, maybe twice before. And now, you know, she's not having him over for her famous avocado toast, so he has an issue with her. This week, he's blasting Prince Harry, saying that Harry is suffering from something called wokeness, and he finds this annoying because he thinks Harry is really a party boy. He also thinks Harry is just being self-important, and he's trying to show that he's a married man now, and he's going to be a dad, and this is a terrible thing. Well, listen, Mr. Morgan. Yeah, that's actually exactly what is happening. He is not 21 anymore, and yeah, he has gone through that phase, but now he's married and becoming a dad. That is typically what happens. It would be strange and weird, and he'd probably be getting a lot of shit from Piers Morgan himself if he was out partying on yachts and dressing like Hitler again. Maybe it's just that I can't stand Piers Morgan, because is there anyone else who is as self-important as he is? It just drives me crazy that they're even putting him out there to have a commentary anymore. And now I'm guilty of talking about him, talking about other people. So, okay, way to go, Jody. Way to be a hypocrite. Also in the news, J-Lo and A-Rod are engaged. Yes, they got engaged on a beach in Mexico. There was a bed with rose petals, spelled out, I heart you, bunch of single red roses on display at the foot of the bed. Yay! Am I the only one finding this extremely cheesy? I mean, I guess good for them that they're in love, but I just found the rose petals and maybe even the engagement. Okay, let me preface this before I get blasted. I'm sure it was romantic. I'm sure there were candles. I think there was a bonfire. Her ring is fucking gorgeous. But I just find all of this a little cliche. I mean, for a couple who has millions and millions of dollars, I would have expected something a little bit more unique in the proposal. It could just be the rose petals on the bed and the single red roses that got me. It just reads very 1988 to me, not something that J-Lo would like. It's just been done before. It might have even been a previous proposal that J-Lo had, but also probably tens of thousands of other people have been engaged in this kind of manner. But that kind of brings up a whole other issue where if your partner proposes to you in a less than exciting way, what do you do? I mean, you can't ruin the moment. You got to say yes. Is that just something that festers until it comes out in marriage therapy later? Or is it something that you just keep to yourself and take to the grave? Or is it something that you share with the group? I'm going to go share with the group. Let's talk about this in the Facebook group where it's nice and private, because that really could be really a fun time talking about bad engagements that you can't talk about with your friends. Okay, anyway, there's more to this story because Jose Canseco, I'll give you a second while you go through your Rolodex in your mind and think of him. Remember, former baseball player, I almost said football. He kind of does look like a football kind of build. He's a little bit larger. He was guilty of using steroids while he was playing. He's also very, very tan. He's been on quite a few reality shows. Well, he says he is willing to take a polygraph to prove that he knows A-Rod is cheating on J-Lo with his ex-wife. Let me clarify, because that might be a little confusing. Okay, Jose is saying that his ex-wife, Jessica Canseco, is or was recently having a relationship with A-Rod. I know, pretty damn juicy. Something tells me this is probably going to get squashed pretty damn quickly with the PR teams. If we can put past us that J-Lo made pink diamonds a thing, we can get past this Jose Canseco. And who's really keeping their fingers on the pulse of what JC is up to these days? All right, let's talk about some Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. I'm ashamed to admit that I still don't totally understand what the big deal is with this Lucy the dog thing or why Dorit herself is styling her hair like a poodle, but I am here for it this season. I am thrilled that LVP is getting totally busted as the liar that she is. I have never been a fan of hers, and I'm probably going to get some Vanderpumpers coming after me, but you know what? It is what it is. Teddy is going to have some explaining to do, though, but I don't think it really matters because Lisa is getting an honest edit. It's long overdue. She said what she said. She's doing what she's doing, and it's caught on film. I don't think there's any way that she can talk her way out of this one. But like I said, Teddy is going to have some explaining to do based on those text messages that old man Todd rolled out last week. Speaking of the last week, it's Love After Lockups last week. It was a 2-hour ordeal. And I'm going to start with Matt and Caitlin, but I really don't even know where to start because right away, there's two things that jump out at me. Number one, the random Office Depot workstation right smack dab in the middle of Mother Matt's family room. What the hell is that? I thought maybe it was a bar, but I didn't see any drink paraphernalia. And then we get Matt on the video phone demanding Caitlin cough up $5,000 from this imaginary, like she's Scrooge McDuck or some shit. She's just going to open a door and jump into a fucking coin vault. I mean, what a fucking dick. Last week, I thought I saw it all, or maybe it was the week before where he was yelling at her in the funeral home. But the fact that Matt picks a fight from behind bars, that's all we really need to know, right? I mean, that shows his personality, and it also shows that his mother, Mother Matt, let's just GoFundMe a one-way ticket to the fucking Vatican. The woman is a living saint. We need to put her in a bubble and protect her from anything else that Matt is throwing at her. Because, you know, this guy's got a lifetime of shit that he's going to be throwing his mother's way. I feel so badly for her that my husband, you know, he knows me pretty damn well. He knows me better than Matt knows Caitlin, that's for sure. As I was pausing and watching this show, taking my notes, I was breathing some deep breaths, and he was like, oh God, what are you doing? You're looking up what her name is so you can go send her something, right? And you know what? I wasn't, but I think it was a pretty damn good idea, and he's absolutely right. Mother Matt deserves a break. Maybe I go and find where she lives, pick her up for the weekend, send her a spa gift certificate. The woman freaking deserves it. Now, I do want to know about this bail process or bond process. I think of this every time I watch Dog the Bounty Hunter, and I try to figure out what the whole gist of bail and bond and a bondsman and you pay 10%. And then I don't really understand how they get their money. And maybe that's where the discrepancy is for me. But anyhow, Caitlin's going to get a crash course because she is going to bail Matt out. I was hoping that the judge would have actually upped the price, upped the bail, after he saw Matt chuckling. Yeah, in case you missed it, the prosecution originally said that they wanted the bail amount to be $25,000, but the judge lowered it to $7,500. And Matt looks at his public defender like, oh my God, are they serious? Only $7,500? I mean, what the fuck? Lock him up. It could be the fact that I was right off of the Leaving Neverland documentary and I was like all fired up about locking every freaking person up. But I was like the flip side of the white dove lady. Remember her when MJ was found innocent, she released the doves. I was feeling the opposite where I just wanted to like cast out a net, tie up Matt and throw him in the cell and throw away the key. Now, I'm not Caitlin's biggest fan, so I was very relieved to see that she checked out of Mother Matt's Laundro Motel and moved on, because Matt truly is a narcissistic sociopath, and that's the long and short of it. Now, their update is that they're still broken up, thank God. Matt is awaiting trial, and he's living with his new girlfriend. What a catch. All right, let's go on to, I'm going to mix it up a little bit. Normally, I talk about Megan, Michael, and Sarah, but I just want to kind of fast forward through Brittany and Marcelino, because I really could have just taken naps during their segment. I'm bored with a pregnant Brittany. I was really more interested in seeing how Amanda managed to get herself in this nice little house. She had a little hanging chair. She had a dusty rose bathroom, and that's pretty damn impressive. I mean, for just 5 months out of prison, I really have questions. I want to know, where does she work? What does she do? Who talked her into that very long, what do you call it? Like a sleek lob. It was perfect for her bone structure. Those are the kind of questions that I have. These are the days of my mind, really. That could be the title of a future memoir, The Days of My Mind. Or is that not really as catchy as I think it's going to be? Okay, anyway, because this is a snarky podcast and you're here to know about how I cringed upon seeing Brittany's dad open his mouth to reveal that set of chompers, not how I started getting codependent thinking about how Brittany's childhood and adulthood was ruined by her alcoholic and neglectful parents, and how she had so much potential to be more than a prisoner and a wife to Marcelino, who is a controlling fuck. No, no, you're going to hear how, despite the color scheme that I did not enjoy and the very questionable, oddly casual attire worn by the guest, I'm looking primarily at Father Marcelino, aka the third unknown member of Cheech and Chong. The wedding was womp womp. I do not enjoy Marcelino's everyday slow talking, let alone this poetry. He was doing like fucking haikus and acrostic poems for his vows. No. Let's just wish them all the best, mazel tov, and move on from them. Update for this couple, Brittany had a baby girl and named her Zoila. So apparently they're big fans of flipping out. Now, let's talk about Megan, Michael, and Sarah. We're picking up from last week and the week before and the week before and the week before, and Sarah finally enters the hotel and tells Megan, "I'm the baby mama and his wife. We're married," and oh my God, the heat you could feel coming off of Megan's face. She didn't even need that new blush that she was wearing. Everyone has had that moment that Megan is having where, even if it's not this same circumstance, obviously, it's where you're sitting there and all of a sudden someone says something or confronts you and the world just shifts its rotation or its axis or whatever the hell the earth spins on, where you're feeling an out-of-body experience. You're levitating out of your body and you're going, oh my God, this isn't happening. You probably feel it in your chest right now. I'm your therapist. Where do you feel the pain? You feel it in your chest, right? Short of breath. Okay, well then Sarah leans back and you really see the extent of her pregnant stomach. And then we hear that the car that Megan was driving in was hers and that Megan got played, but no. And she flips the script on Sarah and says, no, you're actually the one getting played because you're the one that is still currently with him. And I think that was like a mic drop moment. It could have ended right there, but of course it didn't because Sarah could not shut the fuck up. I don't know if I'm the only one that thinks Megan won the fight, because she clearly did in my book. Sarah could have if she would not have come in so hot and ready. Hot and ready. Hot and ready. Is that Little Caesars? Oh, shit. Okay, anyway, she was hot and ready to just vent and let loose, but I think she should have done that with Michael. The things she was yelling at Megan were not even applicable to what was going on. You know, she rehearsed what she was going to say into her translator app in the car on the way over, and she just went with that. It didn't even matter that the conversation wasn't even that heated on Megan's side. Sarah was just going to come in full blast. Now let's talk about Megan's side, where Megan's coming from. I clearly am on Megan's side, but I'm talking about in regards to the fight. I think she won that argument just by staying calm. I'm not saying I'm on Megan's side, like I'm pro mistress or anything like that. I just think in any circumstance like that, calmer heads are going to prevail. Look at the housewives. It happens every time. You stay calm and you use big girl words, you're going to win. As soon as you start going off and flipping your braids and fixing your little hair ties at the end of your braids, you've lost. Now, in saying that, we got to talk about the reality of this because this is a family and Megan was a mistress, although she didn't really know she was. I do believe her that she had no clue that Michael was still married. The situation really, it just sucks. Beyond TV, beyond the drama, I myself am guilty for. I was looking forward to it for weeks. I was cheering it on. But to be real, at the center of this, there are two kids who are forever going to have to look back on this, just like the Teen Mom kids. They're going to see that their dad was choosing himself, really, over anyone else, over them, over their mom. It just sucks, and it's incredibly sad long term. I loved Daddy Donnie. Like, I got a little choked up because I just think he is such a good dad. He tells Megan, don't even pick up the phone. Don't answer his calls. You're not going to get any of the answers that you want. You're not going to get a reason why he did what he did because he got exactly what he wanted. You know why he did what he did. He's a manipulator. Michael is a liar, and the little jailhouse sob story at the end where he's on video call and he's like, oh, I didn't know what marriage meant and I don't know what being a dad means. I'm cynical. It didn't speak to me at all. It didn't read altruistic. Is that the right phrase? It just didn't seem sincere to me. That's what I'm looking for. Let me know what you think. If you feel bad for Michael, I have a feeling the general consensus is he's just an asshole. So the update for this thruple, Megan is still in contact with Michael, which makes me want to smack her upside the fucking head, and so is Sarah. Now, Sarah has been getting some shit, but you know what? She kind of has to be in touch with him. She's got two kids with him. If it's to get back together with him and play house and then break up and play house and break up, shame on her. Don't do that to your kids. But I see why she has to. Now, speaking of Sarah, she gave birth to Michael's second daughter, who she named Rain, and Michael is out of jail. Fingers crossed he stays out of jail, and best of luck to all of them. Now let's go on to Clint and Tracy. I almost feel guilty about how good their segments make me feel because it's really a level of just dirt and filth and grime that should disgust me, but in some way, I can't look away. I'm guessing this is probably what those of you who like watching the Pimple Pomper show and the Dr. Toe or Toe Jam or whatever that show is, I kind of get what satisfaction you get out of that. That's how I feel watching Tracy and Clint. Now, Mother Clint, I think she probably had to work like an overtime shift at Kendall's Kitchen because she took one fucking day off from showing up to dress up her little old man boy, and Clint is already fucking it up. He has got his and one for Walmart t-shirt on inside fucking out, and he's got this mole on the back of his neck. I'm honestly very concerned about it. He has not gone to the dermatologist for a yearly checkup. That thing needs to be removed. I think I've seen it grow three times since we started this season. Now, I'm going to state the obvious that, you know, Tracy, she found the answer, you guys. She is the one. She found the answer to weight loss and obesity in America. I mean, what the hell have we all been doing? That silly thing called exercising and dieting. The New Mexico jail and prison system has the answer. Someone call that lady who, remember, she got shared a seller shampoo, because we got another winner on our hands. We just need to market it out to the masses. And whatever, trolls, it's definitely not drug related. Absolutely not. No, never. Tracy would never do that. She enjoyed her beautiful bridal collection for TJ Maxx dress and the curves she had. And Clint likes big women. I mean, you guys, she didn't purposely lose weight. She doesn't have any control of that. Like I said, it's the miracle diet. It's the New Mexico miracle diet. It's like Miraval, right? Checking into the prison system in New Mexico, it's Miraval. It's a health retreat. You even get complimentary transportation. When you're done with your treatments, they dump you off on the side of the road in front of the Hobbs New Mexico sign, which I'm sure for generations to come is going to be the town's claim to fame. Forget Kendall's Kitchen amazing brisket, which I have heard from quite a few of you is pretty delicious. It's going to be that a woman named Tracy was dropped off in front of our city sign. Yay! Hobbs, I really, really do feel for you. I'm so, so sorry. Now let's fast forward a little bit, because we really didn't see a whole lot of Clint and Tracy, but we get to where Clint picks Tracy up and they're reenacting like Dirty Dancing style. He's Patrick Swayze picking up baby in the corner, spinning her around. There's lifts and twirls. Tracy she's all kinds of messed up. I don't know much about drugs. I can't tell if she was high at the time or if this is just the result of her brain being completely fried from previous usage. Doesn't matter in my book. She needs help really badly. She is so twitchy that I started feeling anxious just by watching her. And it's not just because I'm an anxious person. I just upped my anti-anxiety meds, so I know it's not just me. It's just the jitteriness that comes off her. It makes everyone around her nervous. I think even Clint was nervous. He was confident enough to pick her up when she was like 40, 60 pounds heavier, and he looked scared to pick her up now. He was nervous. And Clint, I mean, let's face it, nothing makes fucking Clint nervous. He dated a prisoner, picked her up, married her the next day, and dropped at least, what, $1,200 within 24 hours. So the fact that he was nervous around her, it just goes to show you that Tracy is toxic in every way, toxic in whatever she's got in her bloodstream and what she gives off, just the vibe of her. Another little fun fact I saw, which was very troubling to me, was that the couch that Clint plopped Tracy on when they got home, yeah, that's the same couch that I used to have a couple years ago. I know it's a horrible, horrible thought to have. I'll tell you what though, it confirmed my suspicion that Clint's entire house was furnished by his parents' old shit. It's 100% accurate because that couch was from Macy's. And we know Clint has not stepped foot in a Macy's. And if he was, he probably would have been quickly escorted out. So there's that. Now, update, Clint's ex-wife Haley fired him, and now he's working at his parents' meat market. Yeah, sorry. Those of you shopping at Kendall's Kitchen, maybe just get your sandwich made when Clint is not working his shift. And other than that, they're going to renew their vows for family and friends and not just the Thursday night two-stepping crowd. Now, in some disturbing late-breaking news, I just saw a post on, I believe it was on Instagram, that Tracy is pregnant with Clint's baby. I really hope it's not true. The child being raised by Clint and Tracy, ugh. Well, I hope that they are not going to be taking any visits to Miraval for themselves or visiting mommy at her health retreat. All right, let's go on to the Bells of the Ball, Lizzie and Scott. We are one day after the argument about lazy eyes and prison pies, and Lizzie and Scott have not talked since. For all we know, Scott could be laying there on that bed face down because Lizzie strangled him earlier, or he's laid out from a night on the toilet after ingesting too much of that coffee made via prison pie. I mean, come on. No one's human digestive system can take that much powdered or processed dairy. It's just not humanly possible. Now, turns out it's actually neither. Whew, much to the relief of the hotel cleaning staff. Instead, Scott is doing what my children do when they know they messed up and they can't decide whether they want to just turn it all around on me again and make me be the meanie mom, or they kind of want me to come in and make them feel better, but they're also really mad. That's what Scott is doing. He's handling this in a very immature way. However, he's got reason to. What happens next between Lizzie and Scott is still so confusing to me a day after watching it. So I called in some reinforcements, aka Dave, to get his take on it because I feel as if I am too emotionally invested in this. I am too opinionated to really see what happened during this fucked up argument. I think Lizzie was turning the argument around on Scott and started making him feel badly for lying to her about money. However, Dave saw it as her just being very honest and coming clean that she was using him. I think I was right, but you let me know. I think the fact that Lizzie started baiting him and berating him, that they're broken up now, just leave, I don't care, you need to be happy, and the fact that Scott actually left, Lizzie was trying to play him into thinking he was the bad guy, right? But then he called her bluff. He up and left, and she clearly was not expecting that because why else would she have then stopped, stood up, started walking towards him and saying, wait, why are you leaving? Wait, where are you going? I mean, come on, you just told him to leave, so he left. You just didn't think he was going to do it. Lizzie is a con, and even Jasmine knows it. She knows her mom used him as a trick, but she's glad to have her back nonetheless, so she doesn't have to worry about Scott's feelings right now. They don't care. So we fast forward quite a bit, at least 7 weeks, because we see that Lizzie, who now goes by Liz, is working at a warehouse or a factory, and I think that's great. Good for her. Get out there, work, make your own money. Although I was really kind of annoyed because if you're truly independent like you say you are, Lizzie, then give the car back. You can't call Scott a loser if he is funding or has purchased your main mode of transportation. So what has Scott been up to? Well, he's still working away at raking up his dirt and working up a sweat, except now he has a female companion, coincidentally, named Jasmine. Record scratch. What is this gorgeous woman who is put together and well-spoken and everything Scott isn't, but his heart deserves? What is she doing there? I just feel like it doesn't make any sense to me because they are not sleeping together, yet they're boyfriend, girlfriend, but they are not intimate. There's some weird relationship issues that Scott has, and clearly the partners that he chooses have. It's very, I don't know, like a housewives storyline where perhaps he's paying someone to be his girlfriend. I don't know, it just seems very off. I don't understand what these female companions of his are getting from a relationship, especially now if he's broke. I mean, I want to believe it, but I don't know if I do. Skepticism aside, what's their update? Well, Scott is working to pay off his debts. He and Jasmine are moving slow and steady. And Lizzie is not pleased that Scott moved on so quickly. Oh, boo-hoo. Sorry about that, Liz. Maybe you can find someone else who can buy you a car and you could return the one that Scott bought for you. Now, I don't know if you caught the little interstitial, but it said Love After Lockup season 3 is coming this summer. And they had a couple clips in there, but it was very difficult to figure out if it was all new couples or mostly new couples. Doesn't really matter because I'm going to be 100% in, and hopefully you're 100% all in for Seeking Sister Wife and Sister Wives, which is coming up right after the break. Listen, you all know me by now and know that mental health is as important to me as making sure I'm healthy and recording all my Housewives episodes. But for real, there's no shame in my game that I have anxiety that, like many of you, I just can't wish away on my own. If there's something that prevents you from finding a sense of control or peace, or even achieving your personal professional goals, I have an incredible resource for you. I've partnered with BetterHelp, who provides online counseling that's there for you as often as you need it. I registered myself the other day, and I was almost instantly matched with a professional counselor that met the criteria I indicated was important to me. And what a bonus that is when you can't find a local therapist. It can be difficult to find a professional that you click with, not to mention who has office hours when you can make it. I mean, who's got the time to take 2 hours out in the middle of the day to go to an appointment? But I can tell you from experience, it is essential. Connecting with a professional counselor in a safe and private online environment is not only convenient to you, but it's a gift you're giving yourself and the people around you. BetterHelp gives you the choice of scheduling secured video or phone sessions. Plus, you can chat and text with your therapist. If your friends don't understand your frustration over 90 Day Fiancé, at least you have your therapist to text now. But seriously, if you're dealing with depression, grief, anxiety, trauma, or even LGBT matters, everything you share is confidential. You can even receive couples counseling, which is a huge benefit. It is damn near impossible to schedule those appointments between work, kids, schedules, and who wants to pay a babysitter to go to therapy on a date night. Plus, if you are not happy with your counselor for any reason, all you have to do is request a new one at any time, and there's no additional charge. Therapists are available in all 50 states and worldwide, and you can start communicating in less than 24 hours. No waiting to find your weekly appointment spot. Best of all, it is truly an affordable option. Personally, it's less than my insurance copay. RealiTV listeners get 10% off your first month with discount code RealiTV, R-E-A-L-I-T-V. Go to betterhelp.com/RealiTV. Fill out your questionnaire and get matched with a counselor you'll love. That's betterhelp.com/RealiTV. Well, in case you missed the previous, 10 hours of Sister Wives, the Browns want to move to Flagstaff. Now, we all know we want Sister Wives. I don't think we want House Hunters that's drawn out for 2 hours straight. The normal 30-minute House Hunters, that's long enough. Maybe leave the scenes of Truly coughing without covering her mouth and directly into the microwave. Maybe we cut that out. Or her minutes of requests for Wi-Fi, or I don't know, maybe I don't need to know about Maddie's thrilling conversations with Janelle about packing Axel's bag into the car. I mean, what the fuck? We gotta edit down the bullshit. Give me more Mary. Give me more Tony. I can't believe I just said give me more Mary. I could take hours of her maybe using her wet bar instead of the floor to put her LuLaRoe packages. I just don't get why we have all the bullshit. I would rather 1 hour of solid classic Sister Wives than 2 hours of filler. I just, you know, I love my polygamy, but I only want the best of it. And why must we have the Browns running around like fucking lunatics every time they have to leave for a road trip? It happens every freaking time. They always have confusion about who's going to pull out of the driveway first and which car is going to block whoever else's car. They need to just calm the fuck down. Maybe go purchase that little game Rush Hour. You guys know what I'm talking about. Most of you who have kids know what I'm talking about. It would blow their freaking mind. It would teach them, like, it's a logic puzzle. Probably would keep Cody quiet for hours on end too. It's a real head scratcher, which actually probably wouldn't be good because he scratches too hard. He's going to lose some more hair follicles. They're quite tender these days. Now, let's get to the good stuff, and that would be a few glimpses of Tony. It's been a while. Anything I can get, I will take it. And if it's Tony raising his hand to say that he didn't like the Cottonwood property, I'm going to take it. However, I'm also going to rip him a new one, because where do I even start with the gall that frickin' Taco Tony has to raise his hand and say he doesn't like this gorgeous place on earth when his slobby flat ass was melting into a torn up lazy boy in that filthy hoarded apartment last season? Do you remember this when it was like bros night, bachelor night? Who the fuck does that? I mean, Tony, the self-esteem on that guy, I cannot believe it. And they even looked over at him like, Tony, you're really raising your hand. Dayton, even St. Dayton was side-eyeing Tony, and Dayton lives with Robin and the two final golden children in that family. So he is used to people full of shit. You know what I hated more than, of course, loving to hate Tony? Cody proclaiming his hatred for rules and regulations. Okay, like the feminist top of my head was blowing off like that little emoji. Cody doesn't like people telling him what he can and can't do. Wonder how he thinks his freaking family and four wives feel when he dictates when and where they're going to move and what they're wearing and where they're working and what they're buying. The hypocrisy was as evident as the early stages of plague, truly, and the little Robins are soon going to be exhibiting. Let's talk about this plague. You know, Christine and Janelle were just looking at each other, very simpatico, wishing Mary would have been down in that dirt plane with the plague too. So what ends up being the verdict? What's the vote? Dear God, someone make a fucking decision so this sweet realtor can be put out of her misery instead of spending her last at least 3 to 4 weekends hemming and hawing with the most indecisive community theater acting troupe. I hope to God she got a really high percentage for her commission because she absolutely deserves it. Well, I'm sure you were just floored by what happens next. Turns out Mary is the lone holdout. You see, she likes the Cottonwood property, but everyone else likes Coyote Pass. Her angels didn't sing because her angels only sing in trees. Maybe because trees need water and you know what lives in water? Catfish! So let's swim down or upstream, wherever catfish swim, and let's get to some things that are more happy, like Aspen's wedding. Well, it turns out no one is happier than Cody. He has been researching kilts and men wearing kilts, lots and lots of men wearing kilts. I mean, hours of time looking for information on what men do and don't wear under their kilts. Wrap the kilt around me, Mitch. Make it tighter, Mitch. Tell me I'm a big man, Mitch. Jesus Christ on a cracker, Cody. You gotta keep it in your pants. He's taken. Maybe put your little scrunchie on it. I mean, my God, nothing, really nothing else in this family makes me more uncomfortable than when Cody goes all bro code. I know you know what I'm talking about. It's whenever his daughters bring guys around. It could be their friends, or really it could even be his son's friends. Anytime there's young men around, oh God, this is like getting really dark here. He starts to like proposition them. It could be to wrestle. It could be to eat certain food with him. It could be to hang out in Janelle's cowboy family room or, you know, to compare the size of their kilts, wink, wink. It's just crazy to me because for such a conservative person, for a conservative man, Cody sure likes to talk about his underwear and his inseam in front of his daughters. It's disgusting and it's bizarre. When his attention-induced adrenaline kicks in, it's as if the boundaries go out the window. I get the cringe sweats. It's like they need to take that cowboy boot lamp of Janelle's and just throw it right at Cody when he acts up. Dislodge the matching boot that's far up Mary's ass and attach it to Cody's ponytail like a... what do they call those things? Like a Rube Goldberg where Cody does something stupid. There's like a lever. Oh, wow. This is really getting intense here. This is like a science project. There's like a lever attached to Cody's bun or his ponytail. You hit something and it works like a lever and the boot just kicks Cody right in the ass. You feeling me? You get what I'm saying here? Okay. Yeah, that was a little far off on a tangent. So let's get back to Flagstaff, our favorite place on earth. Well, they decide to put in an offer at Coyote Pass and the people countered. It's higher than expected. So, you know, it's time for a family meeting. Everyone except Mary is gung-ho on upping their offer a little bit. But you see, Mary just says, everyone knows she's not a financial person. So just make the decision. Yeah, we know, Mary. That's why you took out a type of mortgage you shouldn't have to open up your B&B. Mm-hmm. So fast forward through Mary's Cottonwood pity party because I really just want to fucking dump her ass in the Cottonwood forest, leave her there to live like Nell or whatever the name of that Jodie Foster movie is. In the end, it's good news for almost everyone. They got the land, and then Cody has this little freak out because he realizes that they're moving, and Mary is absolutely intentionally sitting there looking all glum and withdrawn, but don't you dare say she isn't happy because she says she is. Whatever. So let's just leave that there. I'm so over it. And let's go to the travel-themed bridal shower. Get it? Because Aspen is traveling from Miss to Mrs. and they like to travel. So there's travel games and maps and travel things. Yeah, we got it, Maddie. You went to Party City and stole some globes from Christine's library. It's cute. It's very cute. Now let's hear why you hate Mary. Oh, yes, yes, yes. I have been informed of the Twitter tirade Maddie went on. If you don't know about this, you won't be able to find it, at least on Maddie's Twitter page, because she deleted it. She may have just turned off her Twitter completely. But she had two tweets that said something like, it was hell growing up with a monster like that. She never even said her, I don't believe. She definitely didn't use Mary's name, but it was very obvious that she was talking about Mary. I think it's especially telling that Mary was the only mom not helping at this shower. She doesn't have a close relationship with the older kids. Maybe the younger ones, but definitely not the kids who were probably, in her eyes, competition with Mariah. Okay, well, let's get through this shower here, which is ironically the same thing that every person who attends any kind of shower says to themselves when they go in. Aspen, let's see, she gets lingerie, she's uncomfortable and kind of silly about it. McKelty draws attention to herself, as she always does. And I came to the conclusion, this is probably going to be an unpopular opinion, I don't know how I feel about Mitch. I feel like Aspen is way more into Mitch than Mitch is into her. And I hate that I feel this way, but you don't really see him smiling too much when he's with her. It could be, you know, that he's shy and that kind of thing. I hope it's just that, but it just kind of seems like he's got a little bit of control over her that she doesn't realize he has. Like, I don't get why he was there at the shower. That was bizarre to me. I could see maybe stopping in and then leaving, especially during the gift part. It was bizarre. I don't know. She just seems head over heels, and he's kind of like, eh, yeah, I love her. So we'll see next week. I'm sure the wedding is going to be beautiful because Aspen is gorgeous and really their theme is very charming. So next week is wedding day and next up is Seeking Sister Wife. Finally, the winter is coming to an end, which means sunny days ahead. It's time to get back into a routine that makes you feel good, whether that's taking walks outside, getting better sleep, or doing what it takes to boost yourself into feeling your healthiest. Since October, I've been a personal subscriber to Care Of, a monthly subscription vitamin service that's completely personalized with the vitamins and supplements packaged just for me and delivered right to my door. If your health goals are achieving that glowing skin, getting more sleep, or just generally being healthy, Care Of has got your back. Build a daily routine with adorable little packets with all the vitamins and supplements recommended specifically for you and your goals. So how does Care Of figure out what you need and what you want? Well, who doesn't love a quiz? Care Of thought of everything in developing their online quiz, which addresses your specific and unique health goals. No general approach here. One of the supplements I expressed interest in was to help control my appetite, secrets out, and another one to help me recover after workouts. It's not just supplements though. Based on your location and health information, Care Of recommends vitamins you may be deficient in. I'm in the Midwest, so I need more vitamin D in the winter months. That's something I actually would not have thought of, but Care Of did, so I actually didn't come up needing any extra vitamin D at my physical this year, like I did last year. It only takes 5 minutes. It's scientifically backed, so you know what you're putting in your body is safe and it works. Every day you get an inspirational quote or fact, so it keeps it fun and it's easy to take on the go. I just added Care Of's delicious nutrient-packed quick stick powders to my delivery so I can add an extra easy boost on days when I need it. For 50% off your first month of personalized Care Of vitamins, go to takecareof.com and enter REALITV50. That's takecareof.com and enter REALITV50. One more time, that's takecareof.com, promo code REALITV50. Ooh, wow, it has been a rough adjustment for the Snowdens. Turns out Vanessa doesn't hang up her clothes immediately, which really gets on Dimitri's nerves, but ugh, they're just going to have to get used to it. Well, you know what might make it easier for Vanessa to do that? How about not having your kids laying all over her bed and making her your live-in nanny while you're dicking around in the kitchen talking about vases and her vaginal pH, you narcissistic fucking assholes. You guys, I loathe the Snowdens. They are possibly the worst couple on TV right after murderers and all that. I cannot even take them anymore. Not only are they snarky about Vanessa being messy within the confines of their very small bedroom that they gave her, they're questioning her about why she might be nervous to have her sisters to come. I don't know. Maybe she's got to tell them that she's on a diet for Dimitri's dick and why she's all of a sudden doing baby wearing for all three of their kids, including the two of them that are like 4 years too old for it. The self-importance and the hypocrisy. I didn't want to say anything before, but I'm going to say it. Don't think for a second I have not seen that little Ziti, it's the daughter, the middle daughter, or maybe she's the oldest one, whatever. She is holding that iPhone 24/7. Now, I don't have an issue with it. My kids play on iPads and the phone and all that kind of stuff too. But for such an organic, non-GMO, alkaline-free family, seems kind of weird that they're A-okay with their kid to be on a cell phone every fucking second we see her. I suppose the cell phone is better than, Sister Adrienne's boobs. Apparently, little Ziti greets strangers at the door with a handful of honk honk, zero boundaries, and no fucks. Wonder if Ashley skipped that lesson in favor of Dimitri's Espanol lessons. Have you heard him throwing around cinco and sietes and graciases like he's automatically making his kids bilingual by saying two or three words? Yeah, okay, maybe work on the no hands personal space thing first, okay? Read that vibe. You're good at reading energies, aren't you, Snowdens? Maybe read that. No one wants their fucking boobs grabbed by your kid. Okay, well, Jesus Christ. Okay, where are we? Okay, so Adrienne walks in. I'm sorry, you guys. The house is all white, but I am seeing red right now. There is not one redeeming quality I see about these people. I just hope to God their kids don't turn out like complete douchebags like them. We're already talking about the kids. Let's just keep talking about it. Why would you allow your kids to sit on your guests' laps? I could not have been the only one thinking that was weird. And I don't think it's that Adrienne is a weirdo, like she's a pedophile. We're not going, you know, Leaving Neverland style here. It's just that I would never, ever allow my kids to hop in a guest's lap. It's just rude. You just don't do that. You could tell from Adrienne, again, we're talking about reading energy here. They're all into that kind of shit. You can tell she was uncomfortable. You could see it on her face. So maybe step away from your squash saute or whatever the hell was you were doing. Go grab your kid out of her lap and stop staring side-eye in silence. They're talking about Adrienne being cold. Look at Ashley. She was not making a peep. She was over there judging away. So they have no room to frickin' talk. Okay. Now, obviously, I feel a lot like Adrienne. Changing everything about your body and your life for this couple, it's weird. And yeah, I would be pissed off too if I went to lunch with my sisters or even my friends after I flew across the globe and you're just going to nibble on some kale and water. No, of course, this was not the only reason Adrienne's upset. There's way more to it than just ordering a normal meal. It's about seeing your sister's personality completely change, choosing a life that's so out of the realm of everything she knows about her twin sister. And I think it's really important that we talk about that dynamic. Adrienne knows Vanessa more than anyone, more than most brothers and sisters do. They're twins. I'm sure she knows some shit that we don't. They have a history, whatever their childhood was, whatever it is that is drawing Vanessa to this lifestyle, the fact that she is so alarmed by it and worried about it, it makes me extra concerned. And I mean, also, it's the frickin' Snowdens. You don't even need to have a different background or wonder where you're coming from. Look at this couple. They're gonna end up looking at you as a second-class citizen, which is exactly what Adrian said. They're so far up their own asses, you're never going to be on the same equal footing that they put themselves. Okay, before my mind blows and my stomach growls, because when I get angry, I get hungry, and it's not like the other way around for most people where you're hungry so you get angry. Mine works the reverse, which is, you know, why I probably need to lose a cool 40. But let's move on to Bernie and Paige McGee. Well, this family, unlike the Snowdens, it's obvious they're meant to add a wife because, duh, they eat their burgers upside down. I mean, if that doesn't scream compatibility, I don't know what does. Never mind, you got kids, you have a blended family. Don't worry about the income, moral values, religion, taxes, housing, transportation, all that kind of stuff. It's all about how you eat your burger. Not only have I never seen someone eat their burger upside down, but I've never seen a table full of people belly laugh, like from the gut, about something so fucking lame. Like, I feel like I would probably, it's probably a good thing they didn't choose me as their sister wife, because I would have killed them with like a knock-knock joke. They'd probably be in stitches watching how I can annihilate a plate of food. I mean, give me some sauerkraut and kielbasa, and they'll see a Polish girl get fucking down. Bernie, he'd be dumping brandy in a hot second to see Jody wrist deep into some potato pancakes and applesauce. Oh, gosh. Man, I really am hungry. Okay, Paige has this idea to invite Brandy to go to a salon. They can get comfortable with each other. And Paige really is doing this selfishly. I'm not saying it's a selfish thing, but she's doing it for herself so that she's more comfortable in sending Brandy off on a date with Bernie. Now, later, Bernie wants to get together and eat after they go to the salon, and no comment because, let's face it, eating is the most exciting part of my day as well. So let's talk about this, and I'm going to put it in quotes. Oh yeah, I'm going there with the quotes. Let's talk about this salon. I don't think this place is Chamber of Commerce approved. Perhaps we need to look into the Better Business Bureau, because that place better have not have charged for that weak-ass curling iron shit they did to Paige's hair and the fucking French braid and ponytail, perhaps a topsy tail, that Brandy got. I swear to God, I wore my hair in the exact same style as Brandy in sixth grade in 1991 to a roller skating party, and I thought I was fucking killing it, and I looked like shit back then. I'm not blaming Brandy for it. I am blaming that stylist who, she was kind of like a knockoff Vicki Gumbelson. She should know better. When's the last time you went to a salon and you looked over and the stylist next to you was French braiding a grown woman's hair? I don't think Paige is going to have to worry about it becoming a Weekend at Bernie's in his pants, because I don't think any grown man wants to get down with an over 35 French braid. Unless, of course, we're talking about the FLDS, but that is a whole other episode, a whole other day. But Paige, she does get worried after all. After all the giggles and insistence that she loves Brandy, Paige is choking back tears. She says Bernie seems like a kid on Christmas morning. He's picking out his polo shirt to wear, and he slips on his cargo shorts. And somehow, I don't know how I knew it, but I knew they were going mini golfing. Like, I just kind of assumed they were. I don't know if it was the footwear that they chose or probably the zero activities around in that town, but I knew they were going to go putt-putt, which actually reminds me of something I want to touch on. Oh, we talked about Beverly Hills earlier, but really quickly. So remember, Dave used to be a golf pro. He saw Erica Jane swing and he didn't think it was that great. He just thought it was like, eh, so-so. So I think Erica is full of shit that she did her whatever, however you hit the ball, straight down the fairway. Okay, he's the golf pro, I wasn't. Well, Bernie and Brandy, they don't even get to leave to go to mini golf before Paige breaks down and the nicest producer ever that we've probably seen on any reality show goes and gets Bernie and says, you gotta go check on your wife. Pat on the back to that producer. You are a good man or a good woman. Now, this begs the question, at what point do you just call it quits? We see next week that Bernie goes on to go on the date with Brandy, but when do you say, this is bad for me in my marriage? Paige is obviously very torn up about this. She doesn't want it deep down. Her body and her heart are telling her. Even if you are looking at this from a religious point of view, I'm pretty sure God would be okay with you not having a mental and emotional breakdown. I think you just keep your family the way it is. What are you going to lose if you don't add a wife? Your kids are going to be happy. You're happy. And if Bernie's not happy, well, then he can go find another wife without dragging the three of you into it. Okay, let's move on to the Aldridges. Oh my God, we didn't get the Winders, but I enjoyed enough of the Aldridges, I didn't even miss Kip and the girls. So Jennifer is on her way to visit the family, and they really hope it works out this time. They got burned last year, but no, not again. If all goes well after this planned two-week-long visit, they think that there's really no point in wasting time. You just move it along quickly and get that extra set of hands working. Kind of going back to Paige and Bernie, this is one of the other many things that I don't understand about polygamous families. If you want to have more than one wife or more than one husband, I don't really care. But if you're looking at this from a religious point of view, if it's meant to be, and if God wanted this person in your family, then why the rush? Why does Jennifer need to quit her Nancy Kerrigan dreams and pack up her manicuring no-chip kit and move out to the ranch as soon as possible? It should be in God's timing, right? So why the rush? But on the other hand, maybe Jennifer wants to speed it up because she does have a treehouse to call her own and climb up into every night. I bet that's going to work out great after she's had kids and needs to get up to pee three times a night and has to hustle inside to use the one bathroom between 10 people. Yeah, you heard that correctly. One bathroom, 10 people. Can you even frickin' imagine? I actually think sharing a bathroom with your sister, wife, or wives and seven kids, oh, that is far more intimate than having to share anything else. And I mean anything else. Thinking about this leads to so many scenarios and questions that I've running through my mind that I know I don't want the answers to, but I can't help the thoughts coming. So speaking of questions, the burning question, ding, a text message arrives. What's this? A text has rattled Jeff because the response he got to, how are you, to Jen was met with, this is her brother Paul. Jen is in the hospital. She was rushed there. Her appendix burst. Well, obviously she's not coming, and obviously they need to have a little talk with Mary Brown because it sounds like they've been catfished. Aw, poor Charisse. I mean, two heartbreaks back to back. Poor gal. She does not deserve this. Well, you know what you deserve. You deserve more snark and more talk about reality TV. And if you love old school shows, make sure you check out Total Request Podcast. That's my buddy Amanda and I. We are at patreon.com/AmandaAndJody. This week, by request, we recapped Trading Spouses, God Warrior. You know this episode because she is not a Christian. It was pretty incredible. Coming up this week on Patreon, that's patreon.com/realityvpod. Actually, Amanda is going to be joining me for a brief recap of Teen Mom 2 because it's boring as hell. And we're going to be talking a lot about Leaving Neverland and the Oprah special, Moms on the Rocks, new episode coming up on Friday. And as always, you know where to find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at realityvpod. And until next week, stay salty.